comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thanks for being here at Talk Radio, like nowhere else on Earth. It is the show where you matter. Just a quick reminder about K-Files. If you're not subscribed to our free weekly newsletter, why not? Go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, click where it says K-Files, and then you can subscribe. And then you get an email with a confirmation link. Click that, and you're good to go. You remember several months ago when I did a series of shows, two or three shows, having to do with some strange objects that were showing up in photographs from the SOHO satellite. And, of course, there were people that came out and said, now, look, you know, those are just artifacts. They're just weird things in the process of making this photograph. They're not actually things that are around the sun. A little bit hard to convince me of that because they move. Anyway, That all was a big story and still is, and then it sort of faded away. And now we're hearing about NASA readying a probe to basically crash it into the sun. They say it's about the size of a car, and that they're going to do this, it will crash into the sun's atmosphere sometime no later than 2018, according to NASA. It will make a 90 million mile journey to the sun. Along the way, it will get 7 gravity assists from planets, including Venus, and then it will plunge directly into the sun's atmosphere at about 6.4 million kilometers, that's 4 million miles, from the surface of the sun. And it's got a heat shield that will make it where it can withstand the intense heat for a while. So it has instruments on board and is supposed to do all kinds of measurements and things. I got an email from someone who speculated that perhaps this is something else. Perhaps it is NASA's attempt to go through the wormhole that apparently the sun is part of. So I don't know. Hadn't thought about that. Maybe our next open line show we can kind of delve into that a little bit and kind of discuss whether our sun is part of a wormhole or stargate. Some people speculate that anytime you see a star, it's part of a stargate, and on the other end of that is a black hole. So you have a black hole on one end, a star on the other. Well, I don't know. But it's an interesting theory, and it's one we may get into in our next open line show. Boy, we've got a great week lined up for you, so you want to be here every night. We'll be back right after this.
Radio LA. You can now hear The Kevin Smith Show 7 days a week. The Kevin Smith Show live Monday through Friday, 7 to 9 p.m. Pacific, and the best of The Kevin Smith Show Saturdays and Sundays, 8 to 9:30 p.m. Pacific, only on Indy 104 and iRadio LA. Go to Indy104.com for more information. 7 days of Kevin Smith, you can never get enough.
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Robert Morningstar. As you probably deduced either from the website or the open mic I left open when we started the break. Anyway, he is with us, and Robert Morningstar, of course, is editor of UFO Digest. He's much, much more. And, you know, I'll say something about that in just a moment, but let me welcome Robert back to the show. And Robert, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Thank you, Kevin. Appreciate that.
We have a tendency sometimes, folks, to, you know, we just pigeonhole people, okay? There's one very famous guy that, well, not very, he's sort of famous guy, that in writing about me said that I need to just sort of pay attention to what I do best, which is I'm a talk show host. That's what I know best. I use that only as an example. Nothing said about the fact that I read and write music, that I was a professional musician, a studio musician. Nothing said about the fact that I'm an expert in several fields of security, or that I'm an international police officer, was, or that I have served as a diplomatic observer for the United States Department of State. And the list can go on. So when we think about Robert Morningstar, and you think about, okay, he is the editor at UFO Digest, don't pigeonhole him. That is how we know him, but he's also a Tai Chi master. He's also an excellent writer, and the list goes on and on and on, and he knows about a lot of stuff. Robert, let's get a little bit of update here. Now, we've got a strange phenomena that I ask you to come on and talk to us about. But before that, let's get a little bit of an update on what's happening in the world of UFOs from the perspective of the editor of UFO Digest.
Well, it's really been a very interesting summer, beginning with the UFO incident in Xi'an and some other less publicized UFO incidents, like six UFOs appeared over the municipal building in Vancouver, British Columbia, last month.
Six?
And, yeah, six of them. And if you look around on the internet and put six UFOs Vancouver, you'll probably be able to Google it. I mentioned the Xi'an report, which was a very exciting incident because the Chinese seemed to have lost all control of the news for a day.
Mm-hmm.
And it sprung out. It was very interesting. Somebody who was at the airport let the word out. He put it on his iPod, and the word got out in an hour, and it was, you know, viral, as they say, on the internet. So the man saw what was happening. He saw the UFO. He made the report. The airport was closed for an hour between 8:30 and 9:45 on was it the night of July 1st, I believe it was. And they concocted a lot of different stories to cover up the incident. And the man was taken in by the Chinese police and made to see the error of his ways. And he apologized for putting out the report before it had been fully investigated. But the man was an eyewitness, you know? That's how Chinese work over there.
We have quite an audience in China, and there's just some possibility that there may be some government or police officials listening. And if so, let me say... that rather than punish this guy, China should be applauded for getting the news out to the world.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's greatly appreciated. It's a breath of fresh air.
Yes.
But it's something that caused a lot of controversy because several photographs came out within hours of that incident showing an object with several red lights, a very bright light beneath it, a long fuselage.
Yeah, kind of a broad beam of light coming out from under it.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were several photographs. But in the end, it turned out that several of these weren't hoax photos. They were actually photos of a UFO purportedly taken in Lille, France, many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Bruce Maccabee was able to nail one of them down. One of the main pictures that came out, it looked very good. He pointed out that it had been proven to be a helicopter flying in Lille, France. It was an identical photograph. But there were several others that cannot be categorized as the same incident in Lille, France. And there were similarities. I did see a video, one single video of an airliner coming in at that airport with the purported object in the background. And I'd been waiting, and that's allufonews.web or the web.
Yeah, well, you know, sort of the prevailing theory out there, right now anyway, is that that was a missile.
It couldn't have been a missile. Oh, yeah, the one about the launch? Oh, my God. I think I disproved that one pretty well because the difference between the launch site and Xi'an is 2 hours. And the launch was done the next day, so there's no way that launch could have been the object that was seen at that time. So we can write that missile launch story out. That's another cover story. I can give you details on that another time, but basically, let's just talk about the United States. If a UFO was seen in New York at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and then they tried to tell us that it was a launch of a missile from Hawaii they're 5 hours off, right? So
mm-hmm.
a 2 hour difference. It wouldn't have worked out. It could not have happened on the same day in this particular incident in Xi'an. The time zone, I would like to say, the time zones there are really strange. This part of China shares a U-shaped time zone with the launch site in Kazakhstan. So that can be eliminated. But, you know, I am a scientist. I am a ufologist. I would like to see real cases and real evidence. But one thing that I do adhere to is, if I find a common sense explanation for the UFO, which is kind of explicit, I will voice that. I'm not attached to any particular UFO incident. I'm attached to verifying it. And verifying is also showing that there was an alternative explanation. And the alternative explanation I've come up with, I do a lot of astronomy. I've been an amateur astronomer for 25 years or more. Some of my astronomy writings are on UFO Digest, like my observations of Mars in 2003. And so I have this program which I'd like to recommend to all of your listeners. It's called Stellarium, Stellarium, like aquarium, but it's a stellarium. And it's a free download. And I have found this to be a very useful tool because you can punch in any date, time, year, and any location on Earth, and you can see the sky as it was at that precise moment from that location.
Mm-hmm.
So I punched in Xi'an, I punched in the date, I punched in the time, and what did I find? I found that that night, precisely during those hours, between 8:30 and 9:45, a half moon was setting in conjunction with the planet Jupiter. And this is significant, because Jupiter is very, very bright, but it also has 12 moons which array themselves in different configurations aligning around it. And when it's in conjunction with the half moon, it's quite a spectacular sight. So, seeing a conjunction of a half moon and Jupiter setting together over a course of an hour through murky skies. And I can say that with certainty because the videotape that was shown of the Xi'an Airport landing that I referred to,
mm-hmm.
and the murky looking object in the background, I am 98% convinced, 98% certain that this was a misperception of the setting of a half moon alongside Jupiter in conjunction during that hour, 8:30, an hour and 15 minutes. So, but I would like to backtrack to January in Xi'an, where a video was captured of a pyramidal-shaped UFO that was being orbited by a sphere of light. It's a pretty remarkable piece of video, and I would find it very, very difficult, almost impossible to hoax. But the significance of these pyramid-shaped UFOs over Xi'an is that Xi'an is actually the pyramid capital of the world. It has the highest pyramid on this planet at this time known to man. It's 1,000 feet high, and it's a pyramid that was not built stone by stone, but actually a mountain that was shaved off on its sides and then reinforced with stone and trees. And this turned out to be the tomb of the Empress Wu Tang of the Wu Dynasty. And it's a very secret place. The Chinese do not allow foreigners into the area, and there are vast complexes of smaller pyramids that are arrayed in the area. I had the privilege of visiting Xi'an in 1986, and it was quite a remarkable experience.
Well, I know you have sort of a talent for getting into places other people don't seem to be able to get into. Were you able to talk your way into seeing these pyramids?
I didn't get to see the pyramids, but I got to see the 10,000 soldier army of
mm-hmm.
Emperor Qin Shi Huang.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to say that I was a little bit embarrassed after the last show that under the, you know, the, I guess, what about the pressure, like the role, I misspoke and I said that the Qin Dynasty was a lot older. Qin Dynasty was about 220 A.D.
Mm-hmm.
And the Xia Dynasty was the older one that I referred to, so 1,500 years before. Be that as it may, I stand corrected by myself. The Qin Dynasty was 220. But ever since that time, there has been constant UFO activity in China. And particularly in modern times in Western China, where it borders Tibet. And for those who are interested in Asian UFOs, I have never come across a better book than the Chinese Roswell by Herzog Hartwig. It's a remarkable book, and it details the history of Asian UFOs, starting with the official records, actually, of Japan. Japan has the most detailed official records of UFO activity from the 1700s on. But the Chinese records also go back even farther. And I've mentioned in previous broadcasts the remarkable story of the emperor of the Tang Dynasty, Xuanzong, who told of having been invited to go to the moon.
Oh, yeah.
The moon
temple.
Remember that story?
Mm-hmm.
So Chinese lore, Chinese legend and history is steeped in UFO manifestations and alien encounters.
There is something rather more down to earth, a phenomena rather more down to earth, and yet very, very bizarre, happening around the world right now.
Mm-hmm.
Remember in Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones' movie, Men in Black, there was this, the villain was this giant bug, giant mm-hmm. insect, alien insect.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everywhere this alien insect went, whether he went looking like an insect or whether he went disguised as a man, you know, he wore the skin of a man at one point.
Mm-hmm.
But everywhere he went, there were bugs everywhere.
Yeah.
And, you know, it seems that Earth seems to be in the throes of a bug invasion.
Yeah, or bug wars.
Yeah.
You know?
Now, around the globe, there are cities being inundated with these bugs, and you have formulated a bit of a theory about that, about this unpleasant phenomena.
Well, I have a bit of a suspicion that this is not natural. According to what I was reading and preparing for the show, bed bugs had almost completely been eliminated in the United States by the 1950s. And to have this sudden resurgence of bed bugs over such a vast area so rapidly, it's quite unnatural.
Okay, well, first describe for us a little bit about this wide area. I mean, what are we talking about? And how serious is this?
Oh, I'm talking about New York to Cincinnati to London to the Midlands to different parts of Europe. I was just reading about the problems in Cincinnati, and telling me Cincinnati might be the bed bug capital of the world. Poor people, I sympathize with y'all, because New York's got a big problem too, and so we know what that leads to. There's another blight that's striking Chicago, the oak gall gnat, which is even smaller than the bed bug, and just is overrunning different parts of Chicago. I got that report this week. And as I mentioned to you during the break, I was just brushing up on the latest statistics, and it turns out that someone left a bag of bed bugs at the Argonne Armory Municipal Building in Des Moines, Iowa. So there is some, there's one right there, one proof of, some mischief afoot. And I am very suspicious as to this rapid expansion. It says that they've expanded 70% since 2004-2005. To compare to the colonies or incidences that they had then. Reports in New York City went from 500 reports around 1994 to 10,000 reports now. That is staggering. I have friends in England who've told me that they had a bed bug blight and they were forced to freeze their clothes. They had to take every article of clothing and stuff it in the freezer and leave it there for 2 days. Which is one of the best ways to deal, not the freezer, but the cold.
Mm-hmm.
If people are being bothered by bed bugs and you're in a wintry climb, you open the windows when the temperature is below 30, and really well below 30, and seal off a room, open the windows, leave it exposed for 48 hours.
All right, we have to step away for a break, and we'll be back in just a moment with freezing bugs. And folks, there is a cosmic connection. Hang in there. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and my guest Robert Morningstar. And the discussion may seem a little bit strange to you because you thought, well, this is supposed to be UFOs, paranormal. The strange and the unexplained is the overall genre we are working in. And there actually can be and may be a little bit of a cosmic connection to all of this, maybe. And we're going to explore that a little bit. Robert, when we went away, you were saying the folks in England were telling you they had to freeze their clothing and that this is a good way to get rid of the bed bugs.
Mm-hmm. Yes, extreme heat or extreme cold are two methods of dealing with them. If you can get the temperature up to 120 in a room. So I think that steam and... hey, do you know what they do in England to deal with bugs? It's kind of dangerous in my... they have exterminators that use microwave blasters, and they go into houses and they blast the walls because the microwaves go right through the walls and it explode the nests and colonies, but it's kind of dangerous for the other person on the other side of the wall, you know?
Yeah, you got to make sure the other person is not on the other side of the wall.
Yeah, I know, but you know, microwaves travel very long distance.
Mm-hmm.
That was discovered after the Russians started skipping their microwave radars off Lake Ladoga of Leningrad, and then the poor people in Finland and Sweden started to turn up with huge incidences of cancers later on. So microwave is very dangerous. That's why I don't use a cell phone.
Of course, the people out in Phoenix, Arizona, probably will never have to worry about bed bugs because of the extreme heat.
Yeah.
It's living there is, you know, there are a lot of positive things, good things about Phoenix, but living in Phoenix in the summertime is something akin to being in the northern suburbs of hell. And it's really, really hot. All right, let's talk about the cosmic connection here.
Yeah, the cosmic connection.
And the reason I brought this up is because when you and I talked on the telephone, you sort of jokingly said, yeah, they came from... Tell people what you said.
Mm-hmm.
Tell them what you said.
I'm sorry, I lost you there.
Tell people where you said these bed bugs came from.
Well, would you refresh my memory?
You said they came from space.
I know all bugs came from space. That's why I said it. I
mean, yeah.
It's really, this question you posed to me brings me back to something that I discussed on your show maybe a year and a half ago or so, and deals with spheres of interest. We know that the globe is being crisscrossed by UFOs from different groups, and my sources have told me that the globe, the Earth, is under observation by several races of aliens. And amongst those several races of aliens, we have the Greys, we have the Reptilians, the Draconians, we have the Mantids. And I said something, we have the Nordics, the Thal Whites, the humanoid ones. But I said something on your show that resonated with some people and resonated with my common sense, and it was, could it be that these entities have spheres of interest and that the reptoids are interested in the well-being of reptilian creatures on the Earth and that the insectoids are interested in maintaining the insect population as part of the balance of nature in the Earth? Because we know the Earth cannot survive without the insect world.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, and we talked about the terrible news of the bee colony collapse disorder that was happening over the last 2 years, and the good news that I was going to announce on your show. I am going to announce your show a little later. So it is possible that there is some organization behind this, and you know that insects, for the most part, operate on a hive mentality. They have a hive mind. Insects know one thing in one place, and it seems like they may all know it simultaneously in all places, because that's the nature of their minds. And it seems to me that either in defense or by design of some other agency, bugs are being marshaled against human beings. They've always been a huge adversary of humankind, you know, from the flea and the plague in the Middle Ages. It wasn't the rats. Poor rats were only the vectors. The fleas were the agents. And I mentioned to you the use of bed bugs during World War II as vectors for bacteriological warfare. The diabolical General Shiro Ishii of the Japanese Army had tremendous laboratories in Harbin, China, and Manchuria, where they practiced infecting human beings with various diseases. And at one point, Squadron 731 of the Japanese Imperial Army used bed bugs as vectors for bubonic plague against the Chinese people and dropped bed bug bombs all over northern China. And it seems they killed about 400,000 Chinese people with that venture. It's quite horrible to read what the Japanese were doing in germ warfare. That's what it was called in the old days. Now it has a a fancier name, biological warfare.
Mm-hmm.
Germ warfare is pretty nasty stuff.
Yeah.
If you want to, and if you want to see a great depiction of this threat as it was viewed in America in 1939 and 40, get this movie called The Mask of Fu Manchu with Boris Karloff as Fu Manchu. I hadn't seen it since I was a child, maybe 50 years, and it was shown on TV, last year, a real late night thing, so I stopped in. I like Karloff, he's a great actor, but
mm-hmm.
the things he did in this film were diabolical. I mean, using insect venom on human beings and vivisection. And, you know what? You thought it was science fiction in 1939, but then you read the war records, and this fellow, General Shiro Ishii, was doing those things to people in Harbin and Manchuria. And they chose Manchuria because it was a nexus of races. There they had samples of every race on the planet. They had the Oriental, the Chinese, the Koreans, they had Siberians, they had Russians, they had captured Americans, Caucasians, and they were able to do the most horrific experiments. If you go to Google and you type in Shiro Ishii, I-S-H-I, you'll hear the story, or you can read the story of Squadron 731. And, it was, as always, they masked it under a very benign-sounding name. It was the Army Unit for the Prevention of Epidemic Diseases. But what they were, in fact, doing was generating media vectors for mass contamination of the Chinese mainland. And Shiro Ishii was one of those war criminals who was let slide along, with a Pacific version of Operation Paperclip.
Mm-hmm.
He was, instead of being executed, he was rewarded with a position in Fort Detrick, Maryland, organizing the United States biological warfare program after World War II.
Oh, that's interesting.
Up to.
Now, I want to go back to this cosmic connection, though.
Okay.
When you said to me, we were talking about this bed bug infestation and other types of insects, but primarily bed bugs, that seems to be worldwide. I went on the internet, took a look, and sure enough, it's widespread. And I'm not sure now where they place, but Vancouver, even in Canada, reported that they placed in the top few percentage of cities that have problems with bed bugs. And this is a recent thing. But now,
yes,
here's the possibility. When you said to me they came from space, I started thinking about the possibility that, in a way, that might be what's going on. Now, let me explain. Whether a person buys the Mayan prophecy or not, whether you buy into it or not, we do know that as we approach 2012, the Earth is passing through the galactic medium.
Mm-hmm.
And the galactic medium is not something you go through in an hour. You know, it's substantial. It takes a few weeks, few months to get through. But as we're approaching this galactic medium and perhaps beginning to pass through it, there are a lot of theories about all kinds of energies streaming toward the Earth that we're not accustomed to. Now, insects can be agitated and excited by the application of various types of energy, just as people can. And I'm wondering if it's possible. I mean, consider the sun has been very, very quiet for a long time. Now, all of a sudden, it's back to life. All right, we have that going on. We have this galactic medium transit going on with who knows what kinds of energies striking the Earth. Is it possible that all of this cosmic stuff has sort of combined to just agitate the heck out of these insects, cause them to breed at rates and reproduce at rates beyond what's normal for them? And is that then why we're having this worldwide infestation?
Oh, I think that's entirely possible and brilliant idea. One of the things that occurred to me during these days since we last spoke and preparing for this is one of the most significant signs of impending disaster is the strange behavior of insects in the days and months or days and weeks before these events occur. They do actually start to migrate. And as we've said in previous shows, some of the revelations from sources I have about what's going on as far as the observation of the Earth by these various races of UFO scientists of different origins, whether they be reptoids, greys, insectoids, Nordics, all whites, humanoids, Pleiadians, whatever name you have for them. One of them is a great curiosity about some impending global disaster, and that this disaster is building up toward this apparent 2012 schedule, the crossing of the galactic center. So it makes perfect sense to me that if we are being bombarded and irradiated, not just by the emanations from the galactic center, but this upsurge in solar activity, which has fantastic effects also on our magnetic field, who is better prepared or best prepared to feel these things than things that have feelers like the insects? At this point, as horrible and dire as all these threats appear to be, I would like to insert a little piece of good news, which is dealing with the bee collapse. For the last 3 years, we have not seen bees in the New York City area, and we've all been worried about the collapse, the bee colony collapse disorder that's been raging around the world.
We're going to have to get the rest of that when we get back from break, Robert. We'll be back, folks, when this break is over. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Robert Morningstar. We're talking about some pretty weird stuff here. On the one hand, it is kind of weird. On the other hand, so is the genre that we talk about on this show, the strange and unexplained. But look, here's the deal. The deal is that a whole lot of stuff that goes on around us has a cosmic cause, and we just may not be paying attention to it. I'm not saying that all of this insect infestation around the world has a cosmic cause. I am simply asking the question, couldn't it be? Because, you know, before some kind of big event that has the potential of cataclysm, Robert, you pointed out to me during the break that that would be very natural behavior for insects and other animals to go into hyper-reproduction.
Oh, yeah. That's what I was saying. That the hive mentality, the hive mind, is aware of far more than an individual is aware of. And that if a species, insects, let's just call them generically, a species sense a threat to their viability, the nature seems to have this contingency plan of cranking up reproduction. And so bugs may start to reproduce at a far faster rate, perhaps in anticipation of a disaster, I know that in terms of volcanic eruptions and earthquakes and even hurricanes, animals sense it and they start to migrate. I was in Hurricane David in 78 in Puerto Rico, and I saw thousands of frogs, literally thousands of the Coqui frog, the mascot of Puerto Rico. It's a frog that sings like a bird. They started walking inland from the coast where I was. And I mean, I say thousands, but it was millions of them. And it was long before the storm. They felt it coming. The approach of a Category 4 hurricane is one of the most frightening things that I have ever experienced. It's so frightening that I like to joke to people and say, look, it was so bad, the water was trying to jump out of the swimming pool. And this is not an exaggeration, because what happens is the pressure in the atmosphere drops so rapidly that the water in the swimming pool starts to jump up and down in spikes, perfect conical spikes, jumping up and down, hundreds of them, and in rhythm, up, in oscillation. And I looked at them and I said, my God, the water's trying to jump out of the swimming pool. I'm scared. It's one of those times in my life where I said, yeah, I've got something to be scared about. I may not wake up tomorrow morning. And I actually went to sleep thinking that possibility existed.
What do you think? What do you think we would have to do to be able to verify whether this? What I've suggested is not a theory. It's just an idea. Mm-hmm. But what would we have to do to verify whether this is a genuine possibility or not?
Let's see. You'd have to compare. For example, what is the variable that you think is causing this effect? Gamma ray emissions from the center of the galaxy, or X class solar prominences and radiation from the sun? So you'd have to correlate. Let's take the bedbug, for example. Take the bedbug population as it was in 2004, and then see the upsurges, and see if you could find a correlation with solar activity, sunspot activity, or M to X class solar prominences, fluctuations in the magnetic field. That you'd have to choose your variable and then design your study.
And it may not even be what we normally refer to as radiation. Scientists have just discovered, that there are some very, very old ancient galaxies that they were just sort of looking at and noticed that there's more energy coming from those galaxies than they thought there should be based on their age. Mm-hmm. And so they started looking for why, and what they discovered absolutely blew their socks off. What they discovered was that these old ancient galaxies have rings around them, just like some planets have rings around them. Mm-hmm. And they have rings of ultraviolet light.
Mm-hmm.
And that they had no idea that such a thing even existed. This is a brand new discovery. Mm-hmm. And the rings around one of these galaxies, they said, was that covered an area big enough to put many Milky Way galaxies in it.
Yeah, I think that that's a very interesting hypothesis, and I think that ultraviolet light is possibly a good candidate for something that would stimulate bugs to get into high gear in reproduction.
Well, now isn't ultraviolet is used?
Some are good and some are bad.
Ultraviolet is used to get rid of bugs, isn't it?
It depends. Not all ultraviolet is bad. Some ultraviolet is good and essential. But if bugs are sensitive and, let's say, tuned in to ultraviolet vibrations, if they sensed an upsurge in an ultraviolet ray that was detrimental to their existence, there may be a reproductive imperative based in DNA. The DNA could react and say, whoa, this doesn't look good for our livelihood, our likelihood of existence. Let's start cranking out, because the more they reproduce, the likelier it is that one or two would survive whatever cataclysm befell them.
If it's not good for the bugs, it's likely not good for us.
That's true, too. That could be a signal that we're not being cognizant of something in our environment that we should be more aware of and paying more attention to. But that, again, has to do with how much information we're allowed to have. You know, if there is this peril, the purple death from outer space, because they called the second Flash Gordon episode, comes to mind because in that one, the evil extraterrestrial Ming, the Merciless, is sending his ships over Earth, and they're dropping this purple dust that's causing a lot of illness. So it's not that far-fetched. And you know what? We are in a war, and everybody's kind of like faking that we're not in a war. And they are, our adversaries are out to use every possible weapon against us. So one thing I'm curious about, this bedbug explosion in population, is the species. Bedbugs are different from different areas of the world, you know, just like birds and other insects. Different regions of the world have different types of bedbugs. And I would really like to know more about what kind of bedbugs are causing this. Is this the generic American bedbug, or is this bedbug something that was only found in Africa or the Middle East or in India? And it seems, according to what I was reading today, that these bugs are entering the United States also in clothing that is manufactured in third world countries. Because, you know, the nymph is the baby form of the bedbug, or generally baby form of insects. The nymph is so small it's almost invisible, and it's white. It has the adult bedbug, after it has fed, becomes quite visible because it turns red or brown, but the nymph is white. It looks like a teeny weeny little aphid of sorts. It's very small and easily lives in fabric. So one of the things you have to do when combating bedbugs in urban centers now, you have to take all of your clothing, wash it thoroughly, or throw it in dryers and run them. You know, if the clothes are clean, you run them. You have to get rid of cloth. You have to get rid of carpets, rugs, things like that, in which they can propagate.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very expensive experience.
Yeah, you've just been through that, I understand.
I've been through the horror. I'll tell you, folks, I have never been through anything like this in all my life.
All right, we have to take a break. We'll be back. And when we come back, we'll open up the telephone lines. I got a question for you folks. I'd like to know what you think about it. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Robert Morningstar, and we're talking about something that you might not at first think would have any kind of connection to the show, and that's bugs. Bugs are portrayed in cartoons as being cute little things, cute little critters. And they get comic treatment and almost comic treatment in the movie Men in Black, although the Bug is a villain. But the truth is, if the Bugs get really bad enough, they can pretty much make us, they can make us miserable. But they can generate an extinction-level event. Don't tell anybody I said that this is an extinction-level event. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying how things can progress. And so what's the cause? What is it that's causing all these bugs worldwide to become so much more active? And then here is the question I wanted to ask you. In your part of the world, ladies and gentlemen, in your part of the world, what strange bug activity have you noticed? Robert, let's go to the telephone and okay. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hi, Brent.
I have a couple of questions for you, Robert. The first one is a takeoff on what Kevin asked earlier. What I'm going to ask is, we have taken ages to get rid of things like polio, the plague, various other things. What I'm wondering is as we try to exterminate bed bugs, for example, our extermination efforts force them to go into a sort of hibernation, and now as we pass through the galactic median, something is causing them to wake up. By extension, as we pass through the median, could it balance things out so that we're back to where we were, the disease and various other things, back to where we were 3 centuries ago?
I don't think that we could regress as far as medicine treatments, alternatives, to deal with them. I don't think that we would go back 3 centuries. What I would hope in the scenario that you point out is that they are being stimulated by these energies. And another one that came to my memory or my cognizance right now while I was waiting is the increase in the Schumann resonance, which I'll talk about, which is fundamental to life on Earth and may be adversely affected by things like the HARP experiment. So it would be my hope that perhaps this upsurge is due to some kind of cosmic stimulation, and that with the passage of that critical point, crossing the galactic center, the peak in solar activity, that there would be a slumber party for them afterwards, you know? I think it's a very interesting idea about dormancy that you have posed, and I would give it some. I'm giving it some thought. As a matter of fact, I think it's a very interesting point.
Brent, did you have another question?
Sure, Brent.
I did, but I forgot what it was. But I will say this: don't have any interesting bug problems in Wyoming. But today's high in first week of September was 57 degrees.
Okay, now is that unusual?
Well, especially when it's usually about 85 to 90 degrees this time of year.
Okay.
So the coolness is actually working to your advantage, because the heat definitely stirs them up. The hotter it gets, the happier they are, till it gets beyond 110. That's when they start to feel the effects of heat. But it seems that with the coming of hot weather, that's when they get the signal. It's springtime, and it's time to do what everything does in springtime.
So Phoenix would be kind of immune to bed bugs right now?
Well, I would think Phoenix is fairly immune to bed bugs. It's immune to just about anything that doesn't like heat.
There are also people who are immune to bed bugs.
Mm-hmm.
They have a preference. Some poor people are just targets. Of course, you know, the bug world is pheromone driven, So it could be a scent. I'm lucky. They don't like me. Bed bugs don't bite me. I think they have an understanding. They bite me, they die. I get no marks. If I'm bit, how do I know I'm bitten? I never have a mark.
All right, let me give the telephone numbers out. Ladies and gentlemen, okay. The telephone numbers are the main number here in the studio, 623-444-5889. And toll-free, if you're in the USA or Canada, is 888-223-4599. If you can call me without it costing you a long distance, please use the main number, 623-444-5889. If you're outside the USA and you're outside of Canada, I don't have a toll-free number internationally. The main number will work for you. Or you can go to my website, click on where it says Flash Message, just to the right of the graphic about tonight's show. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, good evening. This is Kevin from Northern Alberta calling. How are you, fellas?
Doing well, Kevin. How are you?
Great. Oh, good, good. Good. I was going to make a comment that since we don't use DDT, haven't for a number of years, we're sort of getting away from the strong pesticides. They say that could be one of the causes that these little creatures are on the rise again.
It could be.
That's probably very likely, because not only, well, I don't know what DDT affects on bed bugs, but I know that the effects on malaria. The malaria went up skyrocketing after they cut out the use of DDT in Africa. And so the malaria deaths are sky high because they thought that DDT, and I think it was a lot of propaganda, you know, personally. It's never been proven that DDT has those deleterious effects. I like Silent Spring, but I think it was like greeny propaganda from the 1960s.
Well, yeah, but, you know, there's some physical evidence. You know, for instance, hens that have been exposed to DDT or eat food that was exposed to DDT, the eggshells are so thin, you just to pick them up can break them sometimes.
Yeah, well, there are effects to everything, and there are adaptations to things. There's something about throwing out the baby with the bathwater, and
yeah.
And also let's look at this. DDT solved a lot of problems in the United States that were really, really terrible problems. But then the chemical companies, you know, saw a huge profits possible with other alternative concoctions, and so by branding DDT the bad boy, the evil menace, they created a market for some alternatives which I don't think have proven any safer, and in some cases
and certainly don't seem to be as effective. Kevin, did you have another question or comment?
Well, I was going to say that they found jellyfish in a freshwater lake not too far from us this summer, and that's very unusual. They claim that it was probably brought in by waterfowl, but that's unheard of up here.
What is it that was brought in?
Little jellyfish.
Did you say
on waterfowl.
Jellyfish.
Yeah.
Jellyfish.
Yeah, and that's
I find it hard to believe that a jellyfish would climb on a bird and then plop himself in another pool. That's a kind of strange transportation system.
Well, and a jellyfish would die if he was out of the water for very long.
That's the point. And birds fly very fast, and they dry off very quickly. I haven't heard about this jellyfish problem. Is this in the Great Lakes?
No, this is up in northern Alberta. I'm sure you could find it on the net somewhere. They claim that they're going to die when it freezes, of course, but very unusual.
Yeah.
I certainly have to agree with you. I grew up with jellyfish, and they like hot water. I've never heard of jellyfish that far north.
Yeah, and in freshwater.
It's, And it's been cold and wet up here, so it hasn't been a warm climate at all this year.
Mm-hmm. All right, Kevin, thanks for the call. Weird stuff, huh?
Yeah,
very weird.
So, but you know, before I let you go here, Kevin, let me ask you a question. Do you think...
I think he hung up.
I think he hung up. I was going to ask, does he think that this might be related to all of this cosmic stuff we were talking about? Weird, weird stuff. 623-444-5889 or toll free at 888-223-4599. Folks, what do you think about all of this? Now, look, you know, it's not a myth that we're going through a part of the galaxy that we haven't been through for over 13,000 years, or about 13,000 years. So we don't know, you know, the last time anyone went through all of this. Those people, that was 13,000 years ago, those people are gone, and we just don't know.
Yeah. Kevin, can I say a couple of things to assuage some fears that people might have about this bedbug thing? Because it's, you know...
Yeah, sure. And caller, just hang on. We'll get to you. Go ahead.
Sensationalist propaganda, you know, hysteria going on. A bedbug bite doesn't hurt. It's the aftermath. If you have the reaction to it, that's uncomfortable. It's itchy. Bedbugs, they come around, and if they like you, they come back. If they don't like you, they don't come back. If I'm amazed. You know, people in my building have said they were eaten by bedbugs, and I have found bedbugs crawling. Sometimes it feels like a tickle. I smack it. It's gone. You know. They generally will leave welts on sensitive people, but the bite is not painful. It's far more painful to be bitten by a fire ant or an army ant or any kind of black ant. Then you just don't feel it. These dudes are so subtle, and they have a little habit. They'll bite and run and bite and run and bite and run. They try to get as much as they can, as quickly as they can, and get out. But I think it's being overplayed. And people's fears are being fed by the media. It is a painless bite, and it's a nuisance. People get allergic reactions and welts and hives. I've never had such reactions, and I consider myself lucky for having that. I believe that it may have something to do with blood type. They may prefer a certain type of blood, like type A.
Ooh, I don't want to hear about type A blood being preferred by bedbugs.
Okay.
All right, we have to go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, this is Louie, Kevin, and good evening, Robert, and I'm calling from Connecticut.
Okay, Louie, how are you?
Okay, I'm all right now after that crazy Hurricane Edward.
Yeah. Did your water jump out of the swimming pool?
No, nothing like that.
No,
didn't make it here. It was sunny the rest of the weekend. But here's what I got to say about your bed bugs, though, Robert.
Yeah.
My opinion is...
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, Louie.
Okay, my opinion is cell towers, okay? A lot of people don't realize... They got cell tower right now too close. They got them on billboards. They got them on high-rise buildings. And the frequency, I think, is stirring up all kind of insects. And like around here in Connecticut, we had the bats disappearing. Okay, and I really believe that all these cell towers, they're bringing up the frequency to 3G, 4G. And the certain frequencies are interfering with the bed bugs and any other kind of insect. What's your opinion on that, Robert?
You know, Lou, I think you may have you could be right. You know, one of the strangest experiences I've had in the last couple of years was driving. You're my neighbor. You're in Connecticut. You said right. I was driving up into Connecticut on the Merritt, and I looked a couple of miles up, and I saw a tree that was so high, it was far higher than the surrounding forest. I said, what kind of tree is that? You know, it looks like, I would imagine a redwood might be growing in stature. And as I drove these last, like 2 miles, I suppose, getting closer to this gigantic tree, it was totally out of proportion to a Connecticut forest, I saw that it was a disguise for one of these microwave towers that you're talking about. They were
right.
Dressing up the tower to look like a tree, so not to make an eyesore on the landscape. But I think there may be something to that. These microwaves are very energetic. And as I said before, I don't use a cell phone because I am convinced cell phones cause cancer. Cell phones cause tumors in your ears. I have friends who are members, doctors in the National Academy of Sciences, and they say they do six to eight surgeries a year to remove brain tumors and neurolemmas, which are tumors in your ear. And they're always on the side of the preferred side of phone cell use. So the only way
you
use a phone cell is speakerphone. Use it like a speaker.
Yeah,
Go ahead, Louis.
Put a cell phone next to a soft-boiled egg and call it, and I guarantee within 15 minutes that'd be a hard-boiled egg.
I'd like to do that experiment myself just to prove it to myself. But I have a dear friend named Edson Hendricks. He was one of the three major engineers of the Internet as it was being integrated from ARPANET, DARPANET, and VNET. He was with VNET at IBM. And he is one of the wisest and best scientists I know. And we went on about this, and he said, look, you cook your food with microwave, right? Okay, put the microwave next to your ear, and you're cooking your brain. And it's that simple. People don't want to hear it, don't want to believe it. The Russians knew it. The Russians banned microwave ovens in Russia during the communist era because the Russian Academy of Science says microwave food causes cancer. As soon as communism fell and having a microwave became a status symbol and a device for making life easier and making a lot of money in Russia, that law was taken away, and Russia now is microwave crazy too. You got to watch out for yourself, folks. The government is not protecting you, and the corporations certainly do not have your best interests at heart. They want the fast buck, and they'll tell you any story, tell you the newest gadget, the newest device, even if it's lethal to you. Because if it's lethal to you, you won't be complaining and suing them in 10 years, you know?
Well, you know, that's a point, isn't it?
Isn't it? It's kind of safe. The guy won't know it until he's dead, and then by then it'll be too late. And then they've passed these laws that if you do realize it, it's too late. For example, I know it's in New York State, and the government has passed a couple of laws to protect pharmaceutical companies, for example, from ab reactions to vaccines and drug use. If you don't complain about it within the first year, you don't have the right to sue. But some of the effects of these things that I've discussed, like lethal vaccines, thermisorol, additives, squalene, those things may take 3-4 years before their effects are felt by the body and the immune system.
And then they say you waited too late.
Yeah, you waited too late.
All right, back to the telephone caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin and Robert. This is Victoria from Washington State.
Mm-hmm.
I live on the Juan de Fuca Strait, and we have a comment on this. We have this big, huge, it's kind of like a maple tree. I don't know what kind of tree it is, but it's big at the trunk and all. And the leaves on it typically are about twice the size of my hand, you know, about 8 inches long, probably. They're large, branching leaves, and something really strange this year happened this spring. The leaves started coming out normally, and the leaves on the western side, facing the west, are only about 2.5 inches long. And the leaves on the eastern side of the tree, and normally they're about 8 inches long, are about 4 inches long. And I thought, what in the world is it that this tree knew this spring it's going to happen this winter. I thought that was so peculiar because I've never seen the tree do this before.
Mm-hmm.
And there's absolutely, I mean, there have been no pesticides or toxic kind of things where, you know, we have pretty clean air here from the ocean. And I thought, this tree knows something. And you were talking about the bugs. They know something. But this tree knew something this past spring. And it grew in a way that indicated that maybe it was reserving its energy for something to come. And I wonder if you have had anybody talk to you about any such things, or maybe anyone in the audience, and I'll just go ahead and take this offline. Thank you.
Okay, Victoria. I haven't had anybody say anything to me about that. How about you, Robert?
No, but I think it's a fascinating observation, and I commend Victoria for listening to nature and being observant. That's really good science. That is a fascinating thing. I would say, you know, the thing that comes to mind is light regimen, right? The western side versus the eastern side. Sun rises in the west, sets in the east.
Mm-hmm.
Or vice versa. Rises in the east, sets in the west. Something may, perhaps something to the west is affecting the light regimen. Could also be, where's the rain coming from? It's a pretty interesting observation, you know, and that's really quite a disparity. I think you said 2 inches on one side and the leaves are 4 inches on the other side. That is quite a significant difference.
Yeah, between that and 8 inches. Okay, to the telephone caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Oh, this is John in Mesa. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, John. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. Hey, you were talking about the bed bugs preferring a specific type of blood. I was remembering something I read years ago that said mosquitoes actually prefer O positive.
Yeah, so it would they like me. Mosquitoes like me, but bed bugs don't.
Okay, and you, what type are you?
Type O positive.
You're O positive, but the bed bugs don't like you?
Yeah.
I noticed, I'm A positive, and the mosquitoes don't seem to bother me as much as some of my friends, but I didn't know whether that affected, that same thing was true of bed bugs or not.
Well, you know, it also has a lot to do with diet. As far as mosquitoes are concerned, it has a lot to do with diet, and I understand that people who eat bananas, for example, will have a different odor, and mosquitoes, you know, seem to like that scent. So I think it's more pheromone-driven than anything else. I don't believe in those pesticides that, you know, like chemicals you rub, but I'm certain that there are certain odors that they just don't like and that are more natural.
All right, we have to step away for a break. John, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. All right, folks, we'll be back right after this. Some of the music used here on the Kevin Smith Show comes from the great independent artists at GarageBand.com. Go to GarageBand.com and check out the fabulous selection they have of great independent music by great independent artists. GarageBand.com. Check it out. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Robert Morningstar, and we're talking about what's bugging you. Actually, we're talking about bugs and other things in nature that seem to be reacting rather strangely right now. But reacting to what? And that's what's under discussion. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. Toll-free in the USA and Canada, 888-223-4599. Now, we've heard about the bug infestation, and it's a worldwide problem and seems to be getting a little worse. We've also heard a very strange report out of Canada about jellyfish being in the lake up there. And, you know, that's very weird. And how did that happen? And why are they, what are they reacting to? And we've heard a report about a tree that normally has leaves of about 8 inches in length. And this time, on one side of the tree, about 2.5 inches. On the other side, about 4 inches. What's happening in your part of the planet? Have you noticed something strange like this happening in your part of the nature? Nature doing something. It's my opinion nature doesn't do something for nothing. There's a reason why nature does the things that we see happen in nature. And, you know, cause and effect, I guess, is what we're talking about. So what's the cause here? Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is William from Wisconsin.
Hello, William.
Hi. My question is, does the guest believe that GMO foods might have something to do with the bee colony collapse?
Yes, I do believe that may have something to do with it, because one of the GMO, it's not the food, but the plants that they've engineered are plants that they put in insecticide into it. So the plants are growing with exuding an unnatural insecticide to kill insects that attack the plant, but I'm afraid that it may have gone into the pollen as well and affected the bees. Although there is a theory that a certain kind of mite that arrived here from China may have been the cause for a lot of the bees succumbing, which is one of the reasons I feel so happy to report to you all that this summer I was really thrilled to see a community garden in Riverside Park full of bees going from flower to flower doing their work. And then in conservatory gardens in Central Park, encountered another huge group of bees. And these, and I've been observing bees all my life. You know, I have kinship with bees. They'll walk on my hands. 10 of them will land on my palm. Even yellow jackets, who are not bees. You know, I have a rapport with certain flying insects. But it was great to see them. But the way they were packing the pollen, I've never seen bees pack pollen the way they were doing it. Some were packing it on their hindquarters like big giant saddlebags on a horse. And
William, are you still with us?
Yes.
Well, something has happened here with Robert. He has disappeared. Although we're still connected. Hello. This is not the first time that's happened. William, thanks for the call, man. I appreciate it. Do you have a theory about the GM foods?
Yes, I do. If you're familiar with the Illuminati at all,
yeah.
Their agenda is population control.
Mm-hmm.
And one big way to kill off a large number of people is to destroy the bees. And I know that Bill and Melinda Gates, their foundation, the Rockefellers, they're sponsoring a doomsday vault in the Arctic. So it almost seems like they're expecting something to happen.
And what about you? Are you expecting something to happen?
Well, if you research the Illuminati, you really understand that they really do want us wiped out. And it almost seems like, in fact, the bee population, all this is connected in some way.
Did you hear my proposal the other night, Friday night? We have GM food, GM foods, genetically modified GM foods. And my proposal is we need to have UM foods. You know what that is?
No.
Unmonkeyed with.
Yeah, I haven't listened to you in a couple years.
Ah, well, shame on you. What universes of information you have missed. We're glad you're back.
Yeah.
All right, man. Thanks for the call.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye. All right, we're going to try and see if we can get Robert back. We haven't had this problem in a while, but it has happened before, so we'll see if we can get him back. Well, no. What we have is we're getting a busy signal. Now, we have had that before. Sometimes it has been in such a way that we could tell that someone was sort of messing with us. This really doesn't kind of look that way, so I don't know. I don't know what it is, but we'll let me give it another try. We'll see what we got. Yeah, we get a busy signal, and that is it. So we'll try to get Robert back in just a little bit. That might be him. We shall see. All right, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show.
This is Robert Morningstar from New York.
What happened?
The line went dead. I waited for a call back, so then I didn't, so I called you back.
Yeah, I was trying to call you back, and I would get a busy signal. I would get four of them, you know, beep, no, beep, no, beep, no, beep, and then that was it, and the line would go dead.
Well, we're back now.
Yeah. When we go to break next, what we'll do is we will...
reset the call?
Yeah, we'll try it on the other line that we were already on and see if... we can make connection that way. Because this number is the number people use to call us.
Yeah,
and so they can't call in.
You want me to hang up and you call me back?
Nope. We'll continue as we are. Just on the outside chance that someone didn't want us talking about bees, let's do.
Okay.
The bee population played prominently in... the X-Files movie.
Yeah.
And the bees were being used as a means to spread some kind of biological agent.
Mm-hmm.
That was the intention.
Mm-hmm.
How feasible is that?
Well, bees don't bite. They sting only if they're attacked or feel threatened, so I don't think they'd be a very good vector.
Mm-hmm.
Or if to get humans, I don't think bees would be the thing. A mosquito, or as I said to you, General Shiro Ishii was able to contaminate bed bugs with bubonic plague in World War II China, but that's not an easy thing to do either. And I don't feel that
wasn't there some kind of plan on the American side to use fleas and have flea bombs.
Well,
no, it was not fleas, it was bats.
Bats.
It was bats.
Mm. Well, that's kind of zany too, because bats really don't interact with human beings that much. They don't go out of their way to bite us. I like bats. I always feel happy when I see bats flying around me. And as a matter of fact, we have bats in Riverside Park. 6 o'clock, I'm out there and boop.
Would you feel happy if those bats had 6-foot wingspans?
Mothman is another story. I don't think I'd do.
I've actually seen them. I've actually seen them. They're very common in the South Pacific area and in the Asia Pacific area.
Mm-hmm.
Indonesia,
mm-hmm.
East Timor, and some of the other islands.
Right. To man and animal, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That is a predator. And so, but I'm talking, you know, we really owe a lot to the bats. Bats eat like 5 billion tons of insects a day.
And well, they should be really going after it right now.
Oh, yeah, really. Texas would be uninhabitable if it were not for the bats that come out of those huge caverns every night.
Mm-hmm.
Start to consume the bugs. Personally, I don't think we have enough bats around, you know. Canada could use a lot more bats. I've heard that those forests, as beautiful as they are just, you're eaten up alive by horse flies and bugs of all kinds of things in Canada, and they grow big up there. So,
all right, so what's happening with the bat population right now? Are the bats behaving normally right now?
I haven't checked on bat behavior lately, but, you know, if it's signals that are in the frequency range that affects their hearing, they'd be going bonkers too. Which leads me back to the Schumann resonance. The Schumann resonance is a natural radio vibration, radio frequency that surrounds the Earth, and it's caused by about 50 million lightning strikes that strike the Earth daily. These lightning strikes discharge electricity and radio waves which bounce off the terrain and envelop the globe in this frequency called the Schumann resonance. In the old days when it was discovered, I think it was about 78 or 79, the frequency was about 7.6, which is really important because I'm going to say that's a very harmonious frequency. And right now, it's up in the 12.4 range. And it varies, it oscillates, it rises and it falls, and some people believe that the HARP experiments are, and microwave transmissions, satellites, cell phone towers, etc., have been adversely affecting the Schumann resonance. Now, I said that 7.6 was a harmonious frequency. I based this on the studies that the Russians did in the lethal use of radio frequencies from extremely low frequencies to high frequencies. They found that extremely low frequencies in the range of 1 hertz to about 6.6 induced very deep depressions, debility, bad mental states. When you rose between 6.6, getting up to the 7s, at 7 people started to feel good. At 7.2, 7.3, 7.5, you might say even a feeling of euphoria. People exposed to 7.6 hertz waves, which are actually in...
All right, we have to take a break. We'll be back right after this. We are back. We had a few minutes there where you were not able to call in, but we've got things. Order is restored, and the telephone number is 623-444-5889 or toll-free at 888-223-4599. My guest, Robert Morningstar. And Robert, you were talking about the Schumann frequency.
Yeah, Schumann resonance.
Yeah, and what happens when it gets up to around 12?
Okay, so here was the study. It's just a coincidence that at 7.6 people felt euphoria, and it peaked at 8. Once they raised the frequency to 8 hertz and above, 8, 9, and 10, first the kind of mild anxiety, then a greater anxiety, and then at 10, 11, and 12, sheer panic struck the target, the individuals who were being used in this experiment. And as I said, the current frequency of the Schumann resonance has been raised to 12. So I was saying that this could well be affecting not just humans' behavior, but even the insect world, the animal world, birds. Everything is being affected by these frequencies. I began to say to you that I saw something on CNN where the knowledge of the use of sound frequencies to deter behavior, like loitering, is being used against teenagers. I believe it was California Mall or something, some store, that has put speakers outside their store in the mall area that's beaming out this sound. It's what some people would call white sound, but it's actually the sound of mosquitoes. And these sounds do not affect older people who ignore them, but apparently teenagers are so affected by these sounds they don't want to hang out. They don't want to loiter. They don't want to be near the place. I think that this is unethical, to be honest with you.
All right, we have a call on hold, so let's go to the telephone and caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
Mike from Kentucky.
Hello, Mike.
Hey,
Mike.
Robert, how you doing?
Pretty good.
Hey,
good
I want to know something. Are we going to have an invasion of the insectoids since we're bombing their little bugs?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. But I do believe that the insectoids have an interest in maintaining balance in nature. Kevin was talking about nature always has a plan, and the plan is balance, equilibrium. You know, you throw earth, nature, weather out of equilibrium, it's a self-adjusting system. So whatever is happening is nature's response to unnatural stimulation, whether it be the sun. I mean, that's natural, but you know, hyperactive sunspot activity and super gigantic solar prominences, greater frequencies. It's not average. It's kind of unusual. And then the crossing through the galactic center that we're all anticipating in 2012. So I believe that nature is always readjusting. Nature never stops trying to keep the balance. And let's hope that it will succeed.
Well, my real question after the foolishness there was that what's the possibility that a lot of these bed bugs resurgence is coming up out of South America and Brazil, Mexico, with a lot of the illegal aliens?
Well, you know, I would steer away from that, because most of the illegal alien influx is coming in through the Southwest, and the problem is not in the Southwest. It's over here in the Northeast and in the central United States, Cincinnati. And on top of it, you cannot ascribe the invasion of Chicago by the oak gall mite to illegal aliens coming from Mexico. So I would steer away from that explanation of it myself, personally. Although illegal aliens from Europe and Africa and third world countries coming to New York, listen, this problem started in the most chic, high-class hotels in New York City. This started in the Hilton and the Sheraton Hotel in 2004-2005, and it was from the most posh hotels in New York City, Midtown, that this blight started to spread out. So I would also like to say to people, there's great inhibition about talking about bed bugs because people look askance on them and think, oh, you know, you must live dirty, you must have an unclean house, unkempt. It's not true. It has nothing to do, and that's the first letter, you know, the people who did the treatment in my apartment said, the first sentence is, bed bugs have nothing to do with the socioeconomic status or the cleanliness or anything else. Or status of the resident. It attacks anywhere where it has the opportunity. But in New York, it started in the Sheraton and Hilton hotels in Midtown when two Swiss women complained about rashes that appeared on their legs after they slept there. They went to the hospital and they didn't know what they were. That's how rare it was in 2004 in New York City. Then they went to another specialist, and he said, bed bugs. So then they went to the hotel, and they sued the hotel, and now it's everywhere. Movie theaters are having to tear seats out to replace them, hotels, residences. This is not happening in low slum, low-income tenements. You know, the West Side is a very beautiful neighborhood. We have every socioeconomic group every race represented, and it's happening to the rich as well as to the poor.
So have no inhibitions about speaking about bed bugs because you think it reflects on you badly. It has nothing to do with you. It has to do with the opportunism of insect species who will take advantage of anything to propagate. That's the natural order of things. They have an imperative to live and to propagate, just like we do.
And something seems to be promoting them to live and to propagate profusely right now.
That's right. I think your idea is brilliant, Kevin. You sprung it on me on the show, and I think it's a very, very credible possibility.
Well, I offer it only from the standpoint of a question about, is this possible? Because we know that these cosmic events are happening right now. Mm-hmm. And that's not myth, and it's not fiction. We know that we're going to pass through this galactic medium, and we're beginning to edge up to it now. And so we know these things are reality, and the question then is that having an effect? And, on agitating the animal kingdom, including the bugs.
That's the word. You know, I've been talking about stimulating animal insect behavior, but the word you use is more appropriate. It's agitation. It's agitation. The same way that, you know, the United States Navy, God love them, I love the United States Navy, I've been Navy all my life, but they started towing this, low frequency towed array that was being dragged behind Navy ships.
Robert, you only have 1 minute left.
Okay, well, basically it was driving the whales and the dolphins and the sharks crazy. And there's too much experimentation being done with sound waves, and they're being used against human beings, as I mentioned before. And I think we have to take a stand and ask and demand that these types of experiment, like the feeding of the mosquito buzz, is specifically targeting teenagers in that mall shown on CNN. I think that's unethical. I think it should be illegal, and it's rather disturbing. How many more things like that are being used and affecting people adversely? Lou was right about the cell phone towers along the Connecticut highways. You know,
yeah.
If they're so benevolent, beneficent, why'd have to disguise them like giant trees?
Robert, thanks for being with us. Stay on the phone with me for just a moment. That's a wrap, folks. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You can call me whatever you'd like to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until tomorrow, so long, everybody.